It's time to catch up with the rest of the world via the BBC World Service. And joining me now is BBC reporter Rob Hugh-Jones. Kia ora, Rob.
Hi there, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How's Blighty doing?
Not bad, thanks. You know, cloudy sky. But we're kind of getting over the murder of an MP, I'm afraid, on Friday of last week. You may have heard about that.
I did hear about that.
Yeah, so that's a bit of a sad story. Dr. David Amis, who was meeting members of his constituency in Southend, which is to the east of London, and someone took it upon themselves to stab him and kill him, I'm afraid. So that very much is dominating the news over here just at the moment.
Is there any motive at the moment that we are aware of for this attack?
Well, he's been the 25-year-old man arrested under the Terrorism Act. And there is thought to be a Islamic extremism element to this. That's about as much as we're being told. The police are allowed to question him until Friday. So we, if charges are coming, we would expect them in the coming days.
It's only, what, 4 or 5 years ago that another MP was murdered, also talking to constituents? That's
right. So that was Jo Cox in the north of the country, and she was on her way to meet constituents when she was attacked and killed. And, you know, these look like isolated incidents, but if you talk to MPs, you hear from MPs, you find out that there's an awful lot of kind of hate being bandied around. There's a very interesting interview on Saturday morning on the BBC with the personal assistant of a well-known MP called Yvette Cooper. And the personal assistant was just going through, you know, the amount of hate and threats that she receives aimed at that MP, Yvette Cooper, in their kind of inbox, in their, you know, in the mail that they receive and so on. And it was quite horrifying. You know, this is not a particularly polemic MP. This is not somebody who necessarily would arouse great feelings, and yet she's receiving really a vast amount of kind of hate messages and threats and so on. And MPs across the board, we have 650 MPs in the House of Commons, and across the board MPs say, you know, we're receiving quite a lot of hate mail, quite a lot of threats, and we should have a general discussion in this country now about about the security around our public officials and what we do.
I heard mention of that after the attack over the weekend. But I guess the dilemma is, if you have more security, if you put more barriers between MPs and their constituents, whether you just actually create more distrust and more hate.
Well, that's right. And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff being talked about, like, you know, do you vet people? Should they be vetted? Should we have a system of pre-booked appointments with your MP? You know, can you just drift in and chat to them? You know, should there be a bodyguard there? Should there be somebody with guns there? Which, of course, you know, in the British tradition, we don't like seeing guns paraded by our policemen, let alone security staff. So it is a difficult debate, but it's definitely one this country is going to have, I think, in the coming weeks because of this.
COVID-19 in the UK, or at least in England, maybe you can answer for the whole of UK. I'm always curious about the number of cases and also how the health system is coping. How's it doing at the moment?
Well, it's a weird system, Brian, because when you look at the number of new cases in the UK, across the UK, on Sunday, that's yesterday, there were 45,000 new cases of COVID-19. Now, if you compare that to, say, France, our nearest neighbour, France had 4,800 per day at the moment. Germany has about 8,000. So we're way ahead. We are way ahead of these neighbours of ours. And it's bizarre because if I walk into a local shop or my kid goes to school, you know, by and large, people are not wearing masks. By and large, there is no social distancing going on. My local high street, Main Street, absolutely chock-a-block with people. By and large, people not wearing masks, not really, you know, taking the precautions that they did before. Some people are, particularly older people, you know, more vulnerable people and so on. But really, it's become very lax. And that's because people have been, by and large, been vaccinated. I think it's about 79%, something like that, of people in this country have been double vaxxed. There's a booster campaign in train at the moment, although people like me, you know, slightly younger people, won't expect to see that booster until something like December, maybe. In fact, the flu vaccine is actually a bigger priority for a lot of people at the moment because there are concerns about big flu epidemic this winter. So it's a curious state of affairs because, you know, if you look, as I say, look across the channel to France, where, by the way, vaccination rates are very much similar now to where they are in this country, and there is this massive discrepancy. The thing I would say is that the hospitalization is still manageable, and I think that's the key. And if the NHS is put under too much pressure, then we may see some tightening up of the rules. Mm. But at the moment, it's pretty free and easy.
What other nations are you watching at the moment in terms of COVID developments around the world?
Well, there's, as you know, there are things going on in every nation, but the things that kind of grabbed my attention were the travel restrictions lifted in the United States. So a lot of people have been waiting to see when can they travel to America again. Well, the answer is November the 8th. You can travel to the US if you are suitably vaccinated, like fully vaccinated. And importantly, if you're vaccinated with vaccines that the United States recognizes, then November the 8th is the kind of magic time. And that is the biggest travel change the US has made since the beginning of the pandemic. So that's an interesting one to watch. I think Brazil this coming week is going to be very interesting because the parliamentary inquiry into how President Jair Bolsonaro and his staff coped with the pandemic or managed it, their final report comes out tomorrow, and senators in Brazil will get to vote on it on Wednesday. But it could accuse Mr. Bolsonaro of serious misconduct, and that could lead to criminal charges against him. So it's a big deal for Brazil. And it's quite interesting because it's sort of tokenistic of various countries that are now holding their public officials and their representatives to account. We had this ourselves in Britain last week when two parliamentary committees produced a report that was pretty severely critical of Boris Johnson's government in the early stages of the pandemic. Particularly, you know, the business of discharging elderly people, vulnerable people from hospital, sending them to care homes without adequate protection once they got there. And that led to an awful lot of problems. I should say that that report also congratulated the government on its the speed and pace of its vaccination program. But all in all, it was a pretty critical report.
Just looking at the number of deaths back in your country, which is at the moment it seems to be ranging in the up into the in the hundreds, around about 50 to 100 at the moment, maybe 150. Is that regarded as by most people as what an acceptable kind of number? I'm just curious about that.
No, a lot of people are very upset about that number. I think it's you know, it's an indictment of how this whole thing was managed. You know, this report I mentioned was really the bottom line of that report was the government did not lock down soon enough. And had they done so, they would have saved thousands of lives. I mean, it makes that very, very clear. So, no, I don't think people are complacent about that. What I would say is that there's a big drive on here, as there is elsewhere, to vaccinate people. There is still a rump of the population who don't want to be vaccinated for whatever reason. But there is a big effort to, you know, to really get people, as many people as possible, vaccinated and protected to save them, but also to save the NHS, particularly through the winter. And there is this booster campaign, which is aimed to give a booster dose to about 30 million people. Now, that really amounts to about half the population. So there is quite a lot going on around that at the moment. But no, you won't find much complacency about that figure.
Any new variants of the virus on the loose that we need to know about, Rob?
Not that we have seen. The Delta variant seems to be the dominant one. And, you know, that's what they always said, didn't they? That if it's allowed to roam free and more people get it, then we will get new variants. But we're not seeing anything that's particularly concerning at the moment across the world. What I would say is the World Health Organization this coming week is going to be very critical of how much vaccine richer countries gave and are giving to poorer ones. And they're going to reinforce that message, you know, that until everyone's safe, none of us are safe effectively because of the possibility of new variants. So I think we're going to see quite a lot of that in the news this week. But I'm not aware of any particularly concerning new strain.
Speaking of international diplomacy, Scotland, it's just, what, 2 weeks away from the next attempt to reach a global consensus on how we reduce our greenhouse gas emissions as a global team, COP26.
Yes.
Right. How much excitement in England? Because that's where you are, right?
Absolutely. There is a load of excitement here about this. It's so important because when you look at the what happened in Paris in 2015, you know, only 6 years ago, all the countries got together and there was a historic agreement saying, look, we need to aim for somewhere less than 2 degrees Celsius warming above pre-industrial levels. Well, guess what? Since then, things have changed. The International Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, which is the top body effectively looking at this, saying we must all collectively as a planet reach 1.5 degrees Celsius by the end of this decade. So we've got 9 years to get there. And at the moment, we're not on course to get there, nowhere near really. So this COP26 is really a kind of turbocharged to try and get the world community to come together and make something happen. But I should say, China is absolutely in the middle of this. They're responsible for 27% of the world's emissions, although per capita, of course, the US is somewhat higher. But unless there are new targets set by China at this conference or in the run-up to the conference or even at the end of the conference, unless that happens, there won't be a successful outcome to this conference. So there's a lot riding on China, which is why it was disappointing that President Xi Jinping is not expected to come. Although Xi Jinping hasn't been traveling for years, you know, that's not his thing. He's a man of a certain age. The COVID rate is a lot higher in Glasgow than it is where he is. So you can perhaps understand why he won't. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of negotiating power will the Chinese delegation have when they come to Glasgow. But China is very much at the center of all of this.
But isn't the reason it produces so much fossil fuel and goes through so much fossil fuels is because it's manufacturing so much stuff for the rest of the world? I mean, we buy it, but they make it.
Absolutely, absolutely. But the question is, I guess, how do they make it? And what energy do they have that powers their industry? And how can they be encouraged to reduce their reliance on fossil fuels? You know, that's what it's all about. I mean, China recently came out and said, we won't support or back or finance any new coal plants abroad around the world. But they have also said, it's the typical thing. It's a sort of seesaw operating with China on this, because they'll say that. And then they'll say, well, at home, actually, we're going to ramp up coal production and coal use. Although they have said that they will peak their emissions at 2030. But what happens between now and then is so critical. And if they're ramping up coal use, that's a problem, which is why the world community, I think, is watching China and saying, are we about to see some new targets and new plans set out, which is what many countries are doing right now, these NDCs, these new targets that they're setting ahead of the conference.
Rob, it's been great talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us this evening, our time, this morning, your time.
Thanks so much, Brian. Have a good week.
You too. That's Rob Hugh-Jones from the BBC.